Hey everybody, this is Jimmy Corain, and I got some great news for you improv nerds. If you feel a little rusty in your long form, maybe because of COVID you haven't been able to get your reps in and you're looking for some really constructive feedback, well, I'm going to be teaching my long form tune-up one-day workshop in person here in Chicago on Saturday, April 23rd. I limit that to 10 people. So to sign up, all you have to do is go to my website at jimmycorain.com. Also, my Artist Low Comedy Level 2 online, my virtual Artist Low Comedy class, Level 2, will be starting May 20th, Friday, May 20th, from 1 to 3 Central Standard Time. So if you can't come to Chicago and you've always wanted to work with me, check out my Artist Low Comedy Level 2 class. You're going to love it. It's about slowing your scene work down so you can find the game in the scene quicker and connect with your partner on a deeper and more emotional level. It makes improv as easy as having a conversation. All right, for more information about those classes and my upcoming intensives, go to my website at jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com.
Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Oh, Jimmy.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Come on in. You're listening to another great episode of Improv Nerd. I'm your host, Jimmy Corain, and we've got a great guest for you today, Greg Holloman. He's an improviser and an actor. He was a member of the Second City National Touring Company. He's performed for years in Pimprov here in Chicago, but he is best known as the character of Principal Blackman on Comedy Central, Strangers with Candy. We talked to him about how he creates a stage presence. He has great stage presence on stage, and he shares a little tip on how to do that. We also talked to him about working on Strangers with Candy with people like Stephen Colbert and Amy Sedaris, and how he got that job and why he has so much fun improvising in Pimprov. Before we get to this episode with Greg, my daughter Betsy, she's in kindergarten and she takes art, or she likes to call it art. And she's they're learning like history, and they're learning they spent a lot of time on Greek history, and they drew urns and stuff like that. And the other day, she said to me when I was putting her to sleep, she goes, "Dad, improv is art. We got comedy from the Greeks." So I just thought I was so proud of her, you know, because sometimes I forget. I know I talk about it on this podcast and I write it in blogs, but sometimes I also forget that improv is art, as my daughter would say. You're gonna love this episode. I've known Greg here in Chicago probably since the late 80s, early 90s, when he was at Second City. He is just a great storyteller. He's got a great stage presence and just a great, great, great voice, as you're about to hear. And what I like about this episode is Greg mixes in his acting background with improv, which I think is always really important. I know when we started out, they would always tell you, because I was not a very good actor. I'm still not a very good actor, but they always encourage you to take acting classes. So here it is, the Greg Holloman episode. Enjoy.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
Greg Holloman, thank you for being our guest on Improv Nerd.
Hey, man, you know, thank you, man, for including me. Nobody talks to me anymore. So Colbert doesn't return my calls.
We'll get into that a little later. So you grew up in the housing projects of Cabrini Green, which is on the north side of Chicago, or was. I think they've tore it down.
They tore down my building. As soon as I moved out, I mean, you know, was it really worth anything? Was it worth the bricks it took to build it? I don't think so.
So, and you described yourself as a religious kid who studied scriptures.
Yeah. Damn, you went there, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in a religious family, and it was really good for me. I mean, I'm not a religious at all. I consider myself a spiritual person, but yeah, it gave me a lot.
And what did it give you?
Well, knocking on, I know I was a Jehovah's Witness, so knocking on folks' doors at 9 a.m. on a Saturday. Is there any other training for improv? Be like, what the hell you want? Maybe it's these damn Jemima Witnesses again. Yeah, it gave me a lot.
So how do you get interested in improv?
This is long after I got out of religion, and I was influenced by a friend of mine who was a dancer. This dancer Shabadoo did that movie called Breakin' back in the 80s, and he had a big influence on me. I went to the club. I was married and everything. I went to the club. He was in town. He was a Soul Train dancer. He was on Soul Train, so he was in Chicago. So my friend said, "Hey, man, Shabby Doo's in town. You want to go see him?" And I was like, "Yeah, I guess so." And you remember how Purple Rain opens when Apollonia sees Prince? That's how I was seeing this Negro. He danced. He turned out the club, you know, and just sheer dynamism. And I was like, got to learn to do that shit, man. I got to learn to do that. And so because of him, I wanted to do dance films. And I knew he was gonna go someplace, because he was just dynamic, man. He'd be jumping on banisters in a club, sliding off the banister, doing the split, come up and just turn the room out, you know. And so I was a dancer in the 80s on the north side of Chicago, and I was, you know, real slim. They called me Spaghetti. I was wiry and, you know, did all kind of stuff, moonwalking. I didn't break dance, but I was everything from Fred Astaire to James Brown, you know what I mean? And so then my girlfriend at the time, Deborah B. Bear, she was like, you know, this dancing and everything is nice. Why don't you try your hand at acting? And I was like, nah, if I'm really good, you know, I make people want me. I ain't got to, you know, push myself. She said, well, you know, why don't you just try it? So they had something in the reader looking for actors at Second City, but they were really trying to build their class size there. And that was with Martin DeMott. He guided it. And so I went. And I didn't know anything about improvising or nothing. And so he had me and this other dude and this girl on stage, and he gave us he said, okay, you're in an antique shop and you have to get a gift for an employee. And this girl went off. She's like, ooh, this lamp, I got to have it. Ooh, there's a hat, that'd be really good. Ooh, what about these shoes? Oh, this collection of encyclopedias. She went through like 20 things. And I was sort of like Eddie Murphy. Yeah, she got a hat of shit. Scene. What? so then Cheryl Sloan, I remember she sent me a letter saying, thanks for trying out. Why don't you try one of our, you know, classes? And one was called like the Imagination Room, and the other, or something like that. And the other one was Players Workshop. And I balled it up and threw it in the garbage. And my girlfriend was like, well, why don't you try it out? You're making good money. What do you got to lose? And so I went to the class, took the classes. Best thing in my life. I mean, I was just like, I had so much fun. And I was like 27, 28 at the time. And it was like, I felt like I was in kindergarten, you know? And that's how I got started, Players Workshop. And that's where I met Paul DiNello, Rich Casper, Tony Kostler, a bunch of other people. But and then we, after we graduated from Players Workshop, we went to Second City and started taking classes. Although I enjoyed there, Players Workshop more.
And then you're there for you take a couple terms, and then Don DiPaolo, who was a, you know, legendary Second City performer, but also a great teacher. He encourages you to audition for.
He said, Greg, you should audition. And I was like, nah, told him the same thing I told my girlfriend. I'm really good. You know, I make people want me. He's like, Greg, do the audition. So I did the audition, and I got chosen to tour in the Turco. which was because I was going around saying I was an actor and I wasn't, you know. And it's sort of like, you know, putting yourself there and saying you are. And but it was like one of the happiest days of my life.
Did you when you got over the happiness, which, you know, I'm sure
which I did. You're right.
Was there pressure, like, because this happened very quickly for you, you know, and you were kind of like, I'm not really an actor or whatever. Was there pressure like, oh, I have so much to learn, or was there a learning curve?
No, I was pretty confident as an improviser. I wasn't like politically grounded, you know. I knew zero about politics, but I just like being a clown, being funny, you know. So, you know, the whole thing, playing to the height of your intelligence and all that. So no, there was no pressure. I don't think there was any pressure. I like working with improvisers that are better than me. You know, I don't want to be the smartest guy on stage, you know, and often I'm not. So I know, but I like playing with people, you know, like people like you that are better than me as improvisers, and you know, that bring you out, you know.
And your first touring company, you're with Tim Meadows. You and Tim, right? Are in the
No, it wasn't just Tim Meadows.
Right.
It was what's this dude's name? Ken Olshansky, Michael McCarthy, Dave Sinker, Jill Talley, Jane Lynch, Tim Meadows, and Faith Soloway was our musical.
That's director. A great lineup. And yeah. But when I think about the history of Second City, at that time, it's not a very diverse place. And to have two Black actors in the same company, what was
that? That was like one of the first. That was one of the first. You know what? I didn't think of it like that, you know? I just didn't focus on it. What I liked about improv, and still to this day, that, you know, the whole thing of you can be anything. That was the whole kindergarten aspect of it, you know? And I remember once I was talking to Anthony Irons, and it brought up a dispute. I said, you'll need to have like a Black improv company. He's like, you don't, but here's the deal, Greg. It gives people that otherwise wouldn't have a chance to improvise, which I agree with him on. But I never thought of myself as a Black improviser. It's just actually having fun. I mean, I know I'm Black, you know. But it's the whole play of it. I mean, virality comes into place. You know, there's certain dynamics there when, you know, working with people. And, you know, you realize some are hooked up on the bullshit, you know. But by and large, that was not the case.
And then you get into a touring company with Stephen Colbert, Amy Sedaris, and
they got into a... Let me correct you.
Yes, yes, please.
They got into a touring company with me.
Okay.
Okay, because when they came along, I got hired first, and then the next year, their first company was with Jeff. Was with Chris Farley, and Chris Farley, Amy Sedaris, and Steve, and Rose Abdu. And I think Chris went to the main stage. And Tim did too, so he left our group. And so the second touring company was Rose Abdu, Amy Sedaris, Stephen Colbert, Dave Sinker, myself, and Charlie Solomon. He was the musical director. Charles's trip. You know Charles, right?
Yes, I do.
those were both good touring companies.
So why did you guys work well together? What was it about your chemistry?
I don't know, man. It just clicked, you know? It just clicked, you know? Amy is like a trip all in her own right. And Rose Abdu is a great improviser and a good method, you know, type actor. So, and Steve was Steve. I remember me and Rose always had a thing. We were on the road. We were like, our names are going to be in the paper tomorrow morning. And 99% of the time, it was. Me and Rose would get mentioned where nobody else would.
Why do you think that was? Why do you think that was?
I think Rose knew her charisma and knows how, you know, and they're just good. You know, she was just good. She's just good. It's like Amy. Amy's great. Rose is great. You know, she was just a good chameleon of an actor. She's an actor and an improviser.
And for you, why did you think they were going to put your name in there?
I knew, how can I say this without sounding so assholish and egotistical? I don't know. I knew my power, but it's like something I teach classes. I teach, you know, people some of the exercises I learned as a dancer and as an improviser. Like you've probably done it too, where you close your eyes and you imagine your energy filling the stage, and then you imagine it filling the room. It's like a 5 minute exercise. Then you imagine it going outside, the filling the city, then the world, then the galaxy, and going beyond the universe. So that when you walk on stage, your energy is not contracted, you expand it. So you're walking out there with a presence, you know. And so when I'm taking the stage, and if I'm doing a scene, whether I'm small in the background or something, I am making the presence felt, you know. So the rest is being on top of your lines, knowing them like backwards and forwards, and then, you know, supporting that joke. You know, you could always do a scene and say like, man, they didn't get a laugh there. I knew exactly what they did wrong. That's even when I'm doing dramatic plays. I remember I was doing one called East Texas Hot Links. And I used to work with Ron O.J. Parson, who's a great director. He's directing something that's going to be at the Goodman. What's that movie? I'll think of it later, but anyway, in East Texas Hot Link, I was supposed to be a psychic gambler, you know, and I was supposed to, you know, take this guy's hand and read his palm. And there was a process in my head. Every time I took the guy's palm, I imagined this energy entering his body and coming through and then entering mine, and I would jump back. And that was a mental thing. And all of a sudden, you could feel the chill in the room because I made myself feel the chill, and it went out to the audience. And so every time we first started rehearsing it, Ron said, freeze. Y'all feel that? That was the energy he was looking for, because he was looking for somebody to bring an element of spookiness to the scene. So they did it in Chicago a couple of years ago. He mounted it again. So I went and I wanted to see who was playing the part I had. And they couldn't do it because I knew what I did to get that feeling, you know. And occasionally I do stand up. And it's the same thing about the exercise I was talking about. One time I was with my asshole friend, Mars Timms. I was with Mars. We were doing stand up in I think it was Hopkins, Minnesota. It was some other part of Minnesota. We had two shows. So the first show, the place is packed. You know, I do the same jokes I always do. Is getting laughs on the front to the back, and they just cracking up. Second show, I come out, I do my first joke, and I'm not getting that laugh. And I had to realize. I said, okay, that's when I had to employ different methods. So the thing is, in the first show, I might have been talking to the people in the front of the room. But now I have to talk to the back of the room, and there's not even anybody there, but I pretend like it is. I act like I am talking to somebody at the back of the room, or if there is, I'm looking in seeing the dark of their eyes, and then the people in the front start laughing. But it's all mental. It's the same thing you compartmentalize in your head, and the laughs come. You know, you know, in a sense, you make them feel like a big crowd, even though they're not.
Was part of that the second show in your head going, well, I got a small audience, and there was some disappointment too that you have to like mentally overcome.
Well, I knew it was a smaller audience, but I knew that was the. I knew that was the reason, you know, because of a smaller audience. And yeah, there was a second of panic, but I'm trying to adjust, you know. It's like, oh, okay, what do I do now? And you still have to come out pretending to be effortless and with the confidence and ease, although there's a moment of panic. Another story. So I was doing a play, Flying West, and it was a black drama. And in the second act, it's really tense. You know, in the second act, they've been beating up this one of the characters has been beating up his wife. I'm in love with his wife's sister. And so the second act opens with me with a shotgun in my hand, you know, and I flick it up and it locks in place. Okay, then it's a bunch of times. We're doing a Wednesday morning show. Second act, real serious and tense. You know, when I pop that shotgun up, I'm going to kill this motherfucker. You know, that's what I'm intending to do. Flick my shotgun up, it breaks. It just comes apart. Now it's a comedy. I don't know what I said. No, I said something to the fact, oh, that nigga dies. I'm going to have to go home and get my other gun. But come dawn, that nigga dies. You know, so I had to improvise my way out of it and bring all that tension back to where it's fever pitch, you know. But inside my head, I was like, what the fuck? You know? So thank God I had improvisation. Because if I didn't, I don't know what I would have done. If I didn't know how to improvise, I don't know what I would have done in that instant.
I mean, we've certainly seen a lot of stuff change since we started doing it. What are some of the changes that you've seen in improv?
Well, I don't do a lot of teaching, but on occasion I do once or twice a year or something like that. I don't improvise much unless I come to Chicago and I'll perform with Mars in Pimprov, you know, and I like that because it's a kind of a blues show, but it's a fun show, you know.
But you did that for like 13 years, right?
No, I think I've been doing it for like 9 or 10 years. And
I find interesting about that show is it's a blue show. Yeah. You also use the N-word, right?
And oh yeah, we say nigger left, right, front, center.
Right. And then some other rough language, I guess. Bitches, you say.
Bitches and hoe and this, that, and the other. Right. But what I like about that show is at the end of the show, Mars will often say, it's like, we know we've been saying nigga, bitch, and hoe and all this kind of craziness, but we realize domestic abuse is a serious problem. And for the past 13 years, we've been taking up donations for a domestic abuse shelter. And they get contributions and give it to a domestic abuse shelter, which I thought was great, especially...
Have you seen in the last, you know, 9 or 10 years, how audiences reacted to that language differently?
No, I think they know what they're going to get. And plus the reviews, the past reviews that Pimprov got from the Sun-Times and the Tribune. And so it's I mean, they're just dressing like pimps. just regular improvisation, and
so for people who haven't seen the show, can you just describe it?
No, they're just guys that dress like pimps and improvise. Each pimp has his own, comes out with his own introductions. Like my character's name is Call Me Cat Daddy, and so I might come up. They call me Cat Daddy. I'm the papa of the meow meow, the daddy of the feline. Let me tell you something, baby. With the Cat Daddy, it's all about pussy. Hitting them walls and work your middle. Let me ask you something, baby. When's the last time a man hit your walls and work your middle? Speak up, darling. I can't hear you. You know, so it's
And do you then stay in that character? You'll stay in that character for the whole show?
No.
Okay.
That was just for the... That's just as we improvise, introduce ourselves... Each pimp has a different little introduction, and the introduction is worth the price of admission. And then after that, we get a suggestion from the audience for a scene to take place. And then we work the same like a normal improv.
And what do you like about doing that show?
What I liked about it was at night, 10 o'clock, and I could be a little ignorant if I wanted to. I could say, nigga, bring me my money, you know, or whatever. You know, I could clown and play and do some other, you know. I love the improvisers, you know. Jonathan Keaton, Myers Timms, Keith Smitherman, Chucho. Chucho left the game, but he was pimping for a while. Maddie Robinson and Ramon Smith. So we just have a good time, man.
Is it in a way, because I find sometimes improv, you can be in your head, especially, you know, you got to play the top of your intelligence and, you know, all the rules are in your head. And was there freedom of kind of, because of that, you could let, it was more free because you could be more spontaneous and less guarded?
Well, the thing with those guys, they're constantly breaking the fourth wall. Like, you ain't supposed to be asking all these questions, Mr. Improviser, you know. And so they'll pimp you on that. And so,
does the audience get in on that joke?
Oh yeah, they okay. do. Whether they know about it or not, they still enjoy themselves, whether they know the rules or not, you know. And then they have something, if you break a violation, you have to pretend to be some kind of animal. And half the time I do it, and half the time I'm like, I'm not getting down on that bad knee, so get that out your system, okay?
That's the beauty of getting older when you do improv. You know, it becomes, you know, you're protecting your body.
Yeah. You know what? I always have. Mm-hmm. Even when I was in 28, when I started, I always wore knee pads when I was on stage. You know, and I just came from being a dancer and roller skating, doing splits and sliding across. And I still get physical today, but yeah, this is like there's a lot more getting down on the floor than it was in 1987.
Well, because you can get down on the floor, it's harder to get up.
Get up on the floor.
So get it today. The other thing about improv is that it's a pretty diverse audience, which is kind of rare, isn't it, in improv today?
I am stuck in Don't Call Me Gay Florida. So I don't, I've been down here. So, Don't Say Gay Florida. That's what it is. Don't mm-hmm. Say Gay Florida. So I don't know what people are doing in the improv community, like in Chicago. I don't know how it is like the past 7 years, because I just dropping in when I drop in, you know. Mm-hmm.
And is that is because you hear
I do improv down here at some of the Florida Studio Theater. Mm-hmm. But and no offense, Will, I love doing your show, you know, please invite me back. But it's not as I don't feel as edgy as improv that I would do in Chicago or New York. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more of an edge, I feel.
And I just want to ask you about the you know, diversity in improv since you started. How have you seen that change?
Well, it's, you know, you got, I don't know, you have alternative groups. There's, I don't know, it's not gay prov, but I know there have been gay improv groups or all women, you know, all groups that were all women, you know, all black improvisers. So that kind of has changed. And that's been good. And in a sense, I'm against it, because like I said, what I liked about improv, you'd be gay, black, Chinese, whatever. And if you were in a group, you were all working as a group. But again, like Anthony Irons said, it gives people a chance that normally would not, you know, have a chance. So, and, you know, but then there are unique instances, like Pimprov is unique. You would never have had a pimp prop. That's something that's unique unto itself. Or like Shakespeare, what's the improvisation?
Improvised Shakespeare.
I love that. You know, I did that once. Did I do that once or did I imagine it? I think I did that once. And that's just, it's a unique thing. I think I did do that once. If not, I would like to do it again. Because I played in one Shakespeare play. I played in Julius Caesar. And I was cast as Mark Antony. It was based on Chicago politics. And I loved doing it because I was like, when else am I going to get a chance to play Mark Antony, you know? And it was great. That really changed me.
And then around 2006, I think you got cast for Strangers with Candy, and you
played the movie.
That was the movie.
Yeah, because I got cast. No, actually, that was in 2004. I got cast in a movie, and it almost didn't come out, but it did in 2006.
And when was the series?
I think the series was in 1999, and it played until like 2006 or something.
And you played Principal Blackman. And how
Principal
did you get
Onyx Blackman?
Okay. How did you get that part?
The word was Stephen, Amy, and Paul were writing the show, and they were putting it together. And they were in New York, and I was in Chicago. And they were, I guess, they were doing a Blackman character, and they realized they were doing me. So they were like, oh, let's get him up here and do the show. I was taking care of my mom at the time who had dementia. You know, as you know, it's a progressive disease, and it gets exponentially worse. So I was off doing a film one day. I was doing this film, and my mom was always able to, you know, take messages and, you know, and one day Stephen calls and he's like, hello, Mrs. Holloman, is Greg there? No, baby, he's not in. Can I help you? Well, it's Stephen Colbert. We're in New York. We want to fly him out here to, you know, for a TV pilot we're doing. Well, he's not in, baby, but I'll take a message and you have a blessed day. She hangs up and comes back around, sees the note she wrote maybe a half hour ago. Stephen Colbert. I don't know no Stephen Colbert. Throws it away. I come home. My getting messages. Nigga, he had some messages. I would have told you. All right, I'm just asking. And they've been looking for me for like a week and a half. And fortunately, Rose Abdu knew where she knew my girlfriend. And she called my house and she called her house and said, Greg, they want to fly you out to New York. Stephen knows guys. And I did. So I flew out there, had a half hour to get the Principal Blackman character down and got hired. Almost got one of the best jobs. Thanks a lot, Mom.
What was so great about that job that you like so much?
You know, working with those guys, I mean, I could have been hired by CBS or NBC or some other job at that time, really paying me more, and I wouldn't have taken it because I was having so much fun and I felt so loyal to those guys.
And was there improvising on the set?
Very little. I mean, you would. I mean, there are some improvisational accidents. Like I remember once I was supposed to, there was this time capsule we had made, and I was supposed to take a picture of myself and put the picture in the time capsule. And I did it wrong. I took a picture of myself, put the camera in the time capsule, and kept the picture for myself. And that wound up being an accidental. It was funny, but it was an accident. It wasn't supposed to go like that.
Well, we got to wrap this up, and we always end with the same question. What's one piece of advice you'd give to an improviser starting out today?
Be able to improvise with anyone. Don't fall into the same clique with your particular group. Be able to work with anyone, you know. That's my advice.
And why is that so important, you think?
Because you learn more and you're able to stretch yourself, and it's not just your little clique. You know how you know how it is, these improvisers, they be all in their head thinking they the, no, be you know, be like a Jimmy Corain, a Susan Messing, a Dave Pasquese, a TJ, a Rose Abdoo. Be able to work with anybody. Don't you think that's true?
Yes, I mean, I do. Yeah. Because I think when you work with the same people, you get in the same patterns, you know,
exactly.
You play same relationships. And then when you work with different people, it breaks that up. And then when you go back and play with them, your same group, it gives you
stretch
different choices.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So Greg Holloman, thank you so much for being our guest on Improv Nerd.
Jimmy Crane, anytime, man, for you, my man, and come visit me down here. You know, don't invite many people to my home, but you, sir, come on down. Bring your family. Not your family, just you and
okay. I'll your tell my daughter and my wife. Okay, I'll make it clear. All right. Thank you, Greg. Thanks.
All right.
There you have it. Another great Improv Nerd episode is in the can. I want to thank our guest today, Greg Holloman. I also want to thank my producer, Dan Schiffmacher. He's the one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. If it wasn't for Dan, you would not be hearing my voice right now. If you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning Artist Low Comedy classes, workshops, and intensives, both in person and online, go to my website at jimmycorain.com. Also, you can hear all the improv episodes on there, on the website as well, and sign up for our Improv Nerd newsletter. I write an improv blog, or you'll get information about our upcoming episodes when they're released. Also, follow us on social media. I'm really proud of our Improv Nerd fan Facebook page. So like it or join it because it really helps with my low self-esteem. Follow us on Twitter at improv_nerd. We're on Instagram at jimmycorain.com, I believe. Also, if you love what we do here at Improv Nerd, please go on iTunes and give us a great review. I'd really appreciate it. And of course, I really appreciate you for listening. And thank you so much. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.